Hello there, and welcome to the Unfuck Your Biz with Braden podcast, a show to encourage and empower creative CEOs just like yourself through actionable legal, tax, and financial topics. I'm Braden Drake, an author, lawyer, tax pro, and educator, but you can just call me Braden, your gay best friend, here to help you unfuck that biz. If you're ready to dive in, grab a notebook, maybe some coffee, and buckle in to learn how you can implement solid strategies to build a profitable business. Yeah. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I am very excited because today I'm not talking to myself and to my microphone the entire time I'm sitting here. Instead, I am joined by a lovely guest, Rachel Duncan, who is the owner of Money Healing Club, LLC, based in Colorado. You can find her at www.moneyhealingclub.com. Rachel, how are you doing?
So great. It's great to be here. Thanks, Braden.
Yeah. Are you so glad that I just sent you like a random email yesterday and was like, hey, can we record a podcast? And then you were probably like, what are we talking about? And then I said, we can figure it out tomorrow.
Yeah. And also like, I just feel like that's the way the world works with like internet friends.
Yeah. 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 So for context for everyone, Rachel is a prospective client. We were talking about some trademark stuff. And then as I was looking around at your website to get more information to talk to you about your trademark, I was like, you know what? This, like, you would probably be a great guest for the Unfuck Your Biz podcast because we talk about money stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And this week I'm batching podcast episodes for the next 2 months. So I was like, let's get Rachel on. And here we are.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, absolutely. I think we have a really great like Venn diagram of like what you do and I do with this like great crossover. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I always tell people, I always say I give people like the technical skills they need in order to get their business finances together. But if their head's not in the right space, I'm like, here's some go-to resources for you. But like, I'm not going to help you with that. So Rachel, can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you started doing what it is that you do?
Thank you so much, Braden. So I'm a financial therapist and an art therapist. So I combine my background in mental health and personal finance, as well as creative practices, to help impulse spenders learn to trust themselves. That's the people I work with best are ones that feel, you know, kind of very impulsive with their spending, a little out of control sometimes, and often are very avoidant of their money, have a lot of emotions around it, but you know, they look online, how do I get better with money? And it's like, make a budget and stick to it. And then they're like, well, I can't do that. And they feel like a failure and they come to me or another financial therapist. And, you know, it's a very emotional process. And so what I say is like, I am not a, you know, financial advisor, but after working with me, you could go to one and not cry. It's like that bridge. Yeah. Right? So that you can talk to that stuff or go talk to Braden, right? It's an intermediary where you can learn to kind of like to understand the big emotions you have around money and then be able to interact with them. So I feel like it's the ultimate way to level the playing field. I feel incredibly mission driven. I feel like money is the final frontier right now anyway. And for my generation, I work with a lot of millennials, not exclusively, but I do think the millennial experience with money is very distinctive. So that's kind of what I unpack. And so I went from having kind of a one-on-one traditional therapy practice here in Colorado, in Denver. And last year, 2023, opened it up to a larger coaching program where I could work with anybody under more of a coaching and education model. And that is what the Money Healing Club is. It is distinctly different from my therapy practice. You'd appreciate as a lawyer, I have to keep them very, very separate.
I've done a lot of LLCs for therapists. So we have to talk about this stuff a lot.
Yeah, it's a thing. So the Money Healing Club is the one I can really offer the whole world. And it's a community as well as sort of a coaching intensive where I bring in the creative practices and the emotional practices, as well as some practical personal finance stuff and really hold people's hands through it. Sometimes really sitting down with money for the first time, at least with other people. A lot of people who come to me have tried to do it on their own and it just doesn't work.
So, yeah. Well, I can tell you from firsthand experience that people need this because it would be hard for me to tally up all the people who've cried on meetings with me, and not because I've scared them, but because they're like so embarrassed to tell me like how much money they owe the IRS. Or usually it's, I don't know how much money I owe the IRS because I haven't done tax returns in 5 years or looked at my bookkeeping or done this or done that. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me because I'm just a very practical, solutions-oriented kind of person. So I want to like shake people and tell them like, stop crying, don't be embarrassed. Like, we help people like you every day. I just need like the brass tacks, right? But people, you know, they need to express themselves and like talk about these things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you live in the world. It's not scary to you,
Right.
right? But for folks where it feels like the IRS is this boogeyman, it's this really unknown, mysterious thing, then it's they don't know it. And so what I try to normalize also is if there's aspects of your money that you've been avoiding, I can really understand that because it's been feeling overwhelming. If you don't have another tool, then avoidance is one tool to regulate. Right? I'm
Right.
just not going to deal with that. And of course, though, as we know, the problem builds and builds and the anxiety grows and grows. But I do try to normalize like that impulse to avoid is really normal and natural. And so let's say, okay, that's one choice of five, maybe is avoidance. Let's look at some other ways. Like we have other ways of doing it. Actually, I do have one little exercise where I have people like imagine that like the IRS is just a group of humans trying to do their jobs.
Yes.
Right. And they're very under-resourced and they don't want to screw you. They're really just trying to do their jobs. So,
Yeah.
you know, having a little bit of compassion for the IRS, that's helped me in my journey as a small business owner. So that kind of humanizing, like we're all just humans here.
Yeah, one thing I tell people I always like to do is that whenever I love to drive, like I just got a new car. I really love my car. I love to drive. I love like the whole experience, which I feel like is, you know, like very American of me. But every time I'm driving on these like nice freeways and I have the windows down and I'm having a great time, I always tell myself like a very, very, very small portion of this road was paid for from my tax dollars. And it helps me
Hey.
take pride in the fact that like I'm paying into the system. You know, a lot of us have get government benefits at certain points in our lives, and then at other points in our lives, it's our turn to like feed back into the system, which is a holistic way to think about it.
It
Well,
is. I have a stake here. I'm a stakeholder here.
yes, exactly. So, okay, Rachel, I know that you're going to take us through an exercise because we're going to make this very practical episode. But before we do that, I want you just to tell us, not so much like a sales pitch, but like what's the primary thing that you do, in Money Healing Club? Is it a membership? Do you have courses? What do you got going on? Because I'm
Yeah,
assuming
thank
this
you.
exercise we're doing is like a piece of whatever you're teaching in a broader context.
That's right. Yeah, this is a little appetizer. Well, as everyone's sort of like, I think also thinking about how my business is structured, it's gone through a couple of iterations. So how it is now is it is a membership community, but people have to do a new customers come through an intensive, a 12-week intensive with me and up to nine other people. So like a small group intensive for 12 weeks. And then they can continue in the community where we have like community-wide live events as long as they want. And so yeah, at first it was just community, but people were really wanting more kind of intensity, more like handholding. So right now I offer what's called a healing circle where people come in. There's a self-paced course, which is optional. But I really, it's like a class, like I guide people through because I think it's the relationship part that is the missing piece. And then we have community-wide events. We have like a book club. We have, you know, I run art therapy stuff. And then we have an online forum, but it's really about the, like the live gatherings is really the focus. But yeah, and there are courses that with like my best favorite exercises there as well.
Nice. So moneyhealingclub.com if people want to learn more about all that stuff, is that where they should
That's
go?
right. It's all there. Oh, and I love emails. I have a new email series called Dear Money. So definitely hop on my emails. That's like my favorite thing. It's like love letters.
Nice. Okay. Love that. All right. So you start before we hit record, you started talking to me about the exercise that we are going to go through, and I kind of abruptly cut you off, like not really intentionally. I don't know if it came across that way, but intentionally, so that I was like, it's going to be, I want it to be like fresh when we do it on the podcast. So,
That
well,
was
what are we
smart.
doing?
That was smart. That was really smart. Okay. Okay. So what we're gonna do is you may have heard of like this idea of money scripts, where we're all walking around with things that we've learned about money. Sometimes they're like intense. And they could be something that someone actually said to you, like I remember when my mom said this, or it could be like almost a general sense. I don't know where I learned it. I just had this belief. And a lot of us sometimes are kind of like fighting that, like, why does that keep coming up? Or I just think this is a given and I'm not questioning it. So this is an exercise to identify those and start working with them a little bit instead of like tossing them away or trying to reject them. So what I want you to do is, here you can see on my paper, I want you to make a quadrant. Brayden has no paper, so he's going to use sticky notes, which is fine. So four sticky notes, okay? And these are, I just boiled this down to the basics. We have income, expenses, debt, and savings. And I want you to use those words, all right?
So I should be like titling my sticky notes or the quadrant.
Yeah, and have some space around them because you're going to kind of jot in some notes around them.
Okay, you can tell I'm a Virgo because I did like a title at the top so I can do bullet points underneath, like less of a
I know you did. You do you. You do
you.
So
income, exactly. Expenses, debt, what was the last one? Savings?
And savings, yeah.
Okay, so Rachel, you're going to walk me through this exercise as an example, but all the listeners, I mean, if you're like driving or something like that, don't get out your pen and paper, but you can definitely come back and do this later by memory or re-listen to it later. Get out your paper and do the exercise, right?
Yeah. And for listeners, basically you're making like how a kid would draw a window, like a big square that's broken up into four squares.
Beautiful. That was a great, great analogy.
Perfect.
All right. So what's next? What am I doing?
Okay. So now, and I'll kind of talk as you do this. Normally I would give people some quiet time, but we don't want quiet air time, do we? I want you to look at each of these words and go brick by brick and write down the phrase that just like pops up when I say income. Just like, what are your beliefs about this? What comes up? You know, those quiet voices. I will say of the four, debt is usually the loudest in terms of opinions, in terms of visceral reaction. I'll give some examples for me. This is my personal quadrant. So like for income, immediately, we're poor but proud. That is a family narrative. I would say your reactions to the income word probably have a lot to do with class. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Another one's like, money is the root of all evil. I can't become a rich person. I'll be a bad person, right? Mm-hmm. These are like just these absolute statements that come up. For expenses, what comes up is don't show off. That was like a family value, don't show off. But also like, I deserve it. I deserve fun things. I deserve the going out. I deserve to be treated. Try to just receive these without judging them, because you're very familiar. None of this is going to be new. This is stuff that like has popped up for you all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, debt. My dad believed no one should ever have a credit card. He believed they were totally evil. He had real strong reactions. It's like something that's kind of in my bones. You know, never owe anyone anything. But I have definitely have clients that it's like debt's free money. Right. So this is like, I'm just giving examples from my thing. There's no right or wrong. And then lastly, for savings, one is like investing is for rich people. That's one that comes up. But on the other side, someone will help you out if you're broke. Don't worry about saving. Mm-hmm. So like these really kind of like distinctive, sometimes competing phrases coming up. So those are mine. Would you care to share any of yours, Brayden?
Yeah. So the investing is for rich people. That's an interesting one. I don't think I've really heard that. And I feel like I've read like a lot of personal finance books.
You haven't met my family.
But are they saying like, oh, like investments are like fancy and like the fancy stuff is like for the rich people? Or are they saying like only rich people literally have enough money like to save and invest?
Both. That's definitely what I grew up with. Yeah.
Interesting. So the income one is the easiest for me because, and we might be getting there. I don't know what the end part two of this exercise is, but I already have like a personal mantra to like resolve this money mantra I got as a child. So my mom's like favorite go-to was, she would say, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. That was, I think a lot of people have heard that, but in particular, whenever we would ask for something, especially if it was like a want and not a need, she'd be like, okay, yeah, no problem. Just go get the money. Like just go pick the money off the money tree. Like she'd say it very sarcastically, like go out back and get the money off of our money tree. And then you go and get it. So my personal,
and what would your reaction be? I'm curious as a kid,
I just roll my eyes probably and be like, oh, I never, you know, I think my parents raised us relatively in a sense to where we realized that we were, I call it country middle class, which I think is different from like city middle class. Like I always felt not affluent, but I was I recognized, like, as an elementary schooler that, like, we got to go to Florida on spring break every year because my grandparents spent half the year in Florida in, like, a modular home, you know, nothing super fancy, but half the year in Indiana. My grandpa retired with a pension. And just simple things like that was something that I didn't see probably like two-thirds of my schoolmates like getting to experience, right? I got a new pair of shoes every year at the start of the school year. And when basketball season rolled around, I got like new basketball shoes. And
No,
then I had like
needs
a,
were met, needs and wants were met, sounds
yeah,
like.
I would say needs were met. And I would say the ones like at the top of the list were met if they were reasonable. I asked for a trampoline every year. I never got one. Parents didn't think that was a need, right? But within reason, ones were met. So I think I recognized that pretty early on, but we didn't get, you know, like whatever we wanted, and we didn't have like name brand everything until we were at like a certain
Right. It
age.
sounds like there's an unspoken kind of list of the needs and wants
Right.
that it took some time of your mom kind of training you, like that's not on the money tree, or
Yeah.
like, you know, but that like it sounds like over time, okay, I kind of know like what's in this list and what's in that list.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. It was also like we, I never got to have like the latest gaming console, but like when my best friend got like the Xbox 360, I like bought his old Xbox off of him, like with my work money, that kind of thing. But at the same time, like my sister's like got to get like a few things here and there at Abercrombie in high school, you know? So my mom was like allowing us to do some of like the popular kid stuff within reason, which is costly.
Right.
I'm
Kind of like
looking at my
fit
nieces
in.
and nephews now that are like 10 years old and were only wear Nike. And I'm like, that wouldn't have happened when I was little necessarily.
Right. Generational stuff. So class stuff, generational
Yeah.
stuff,
Yeah.
location, geography, language, culture, race, all of these things have like so
Yeah.
much to do with this quadrant. Absolutely. All right. I'm curious about the other three. What did you have for expenses? What came up for you?
Okay. So I feel like these kind of come hand in hand, but for expenses, first of all, I just wrote like, which goes into our whole need and want thing. I just wrote like, do you need that? Like, do you actually need that? Which is more of just like a question, right? And then I also wrote treat yourself, which is like a have you seen Parks and Rec, right? Have you seen
Yeah.
that
Oh
meme?
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
So I'm a big treat yourself kind of person. I'm a spender, but then also like my mom was always that kind of way too. Like growing up, she had her like bi-weekly nail appointment kind of a thing. So I
So like there's
wasn't
a little bit of like it was there's a little bit of modeling like this it's not necessarily re some people come from a real rebellious thing. Oh, I was never allowed to, so now I'm
Yeah.
going to kind of rebel against my parents. It sounds like, you know, even if I don't know if that's there for you, but there's also like, oh, it's kind of like mom.
Yeah, when we'll get there when we talk about savings, but like I always feel like my parents preach the importance of savings, but I wasn't really personally witnessing it. So
Yeah, kind of like pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, kind of like a mysterious thing.
right. Like we weren't, and no one really seemed particularly frugal other than my grandpa, who was also fairly preachy about it. So I got some of that stuff too.
Gotcha. What came up with you around debt?
I did write cash only. That's like more of my dad's kind of thing. He grew up, his dad was a farmer. My dad always says he's the black sheep in the family because he's the only like out of the nine children that like didn't go into farming. And they are all like big, like cash everything. I think I bring up the farming because they get their income in one lump sum like every year, pretty much when they harvest their crop. So then it's easy to say, like, okay, well, I'm going to go pay cash for a new pickup truck now, and the rest of the money is going to get saved. But he's still, my dad is, you know, in his 60s now and like doesn't have a credit card and
But
like
it's
owns
still
more,
for
like,
you. Do you have a credit card? Do
yeah,
you
I
use
do.
credit?
Yeah,
Okay.
I do. I
Yeah.
take a more modern approach, I think, to finances. A more
Gotcha. Right.
anti-Dave Ramsey approach, we'll say.
Again, generational differences.
Right.
Absolutely. And lifestyle differences. And yeah, being paid once a year is a very different experience with money than being self-employed or being paid bi-weekly. Very different.
Right.
All right. Then what about savings? What can you do?
This one was hard for me because I just wrote like I wrote save 10%. I don't know why. My mind kind of immediately went to like church tithings, which I don't think is necessarily savings, but it's similar in a way. And then also, you know, we were always told to like save a little bit of like all the money you get. So at Christmas time, if we got like $150 from various sources, they would want us to put like $50 in our savings account and then we could spend the rest.
I gotta say, like, it sounds like, not that anyone's, perfect or whatever, but it does sound like you were raised with a pretty positive attitude about money and that you were involved in the conversations. It sounds like, of course, not everything. You didn't really know what maybe the ins and outs of your parents' savings was, but that, like, they communicated this with you guys and were relatively consistent, would you
Yeah, re
say?
yeah, re relatively. I would say I feel like some people, it wasn't ever like really a big conversation because I don't think my parents like ever aspired. Like, both of my parents are very much just like, we work because we have to like make money. They don't have these like huge entrepreneurial aspirational goals kind of a thing. So there weren't some of these, it was just kind of like money's around, like we'll spend it when we need to. And that's just it kind of is what it is, kind of a thing.
So this kind of leads to the next part, and I'm wondering if then, with you being an entrepreneur, are there phrases here that kind of get in your way, or that you, because you said, oh, I'm actively rewriting the income one, like you've already been doing this work, like knowing that what you need out of money, is not the same as where all of these phrases came from.
Yeah, I'm not, for me, it's a lot of like more like amorphous concepts than it's hard for me to put a phrase to some of them. But for a long, and I got this from books. I didn't like realize it was an actual thing that people struggled with, but I've never really been able to save. And I've learned that they say that comes from like a scarcity kind of mentality, right? It's like when you see money in your bank account, you like want to spend it before it's gone. But then by spending it, you're the person that's depleting the bank account. But it's almost, it's like a scaredness or inability to like let money accumulate in a certain area. So like that's been my personal like biggest issue and something I'm still
Oof.
working on.
And I think we don't talk about that enough. I actually think that's such a number one thing. It comes up in the club all the time, of like literally feeling discomfort having money in the account sometimes. And I think there's so many interesting conversations about that. Like, to name a few, I think there's some real intergenerational stuff where, if your ancestors, like even just a few generations back, their money could have been taken from them, their land could have been taken from them. And like, the people who hide the money in the mattresses, like if you think about like the Great Depression, like their money was literally taken from them. And so, but if I buy this thing, this exists. Like, they can't take this from me. Like, they could take my money. And I think that there's, that scarcity thing. When time and resources feel really scarce, we're gonna go to like what's presently, like how we can meet our need right now. And our brain think is gonna go for a concrete. I'm tapping my glass. Is gonna go for a concrete thing over something that's feels so abstract, like savings, right? Or like future me. And it's like you are always going to take care of present you before future you.
It's kind of like it's kind of like people who've had food insecurities that like overeat when they do have food is like similar. Do you think it's like similar to that?
Well, oh, there are so many parallels, like with food. We talk about it a lot. Actually, we have a nutritionist in our club, and I had put up a graphic of kind of like the binge restrict cycle with budgeting. And she was like, look what this looks like. And she brought up the diet cycle, and it's the same, right?
You're
Like,
talking about like
there's a lot,
stashing the
because it's a,
money. We had that when my great grandma passed away. They found cash like hidden everywhere in her
everywhere,
retirement home.
which is so real, right? We think about like where she came from, that is very real, that you couldn't trust the banks, right? And so, like, the next part of this exercise is, which you kind of already did so beautifully, is like, okay, where did these phrases come from? If it was someone specific, kind of reflect on that. If it was something general, like my people, if I think about my people, how did my people come to believe that? What makes sense, right? And sometimes you have to guess if you don't know the history, but like if you know that there's maybe a story of immigration in your country or in your family, I mean, or if there's a story of being impacted by war. Both of my parents were really impacted. They were both born during World War II, and so they were both really displaced by war. So like that, it's like, okay, I can kind of understand maybe where some of those phrases came from. So we kind of go through each, if I had a whole session with you, we go through each one. Where did this come from? Why was that important for them? Why, this is the important part, how did this statement protect them? How is this a statement of protection and safety? that it has been passed on to you.
Mm-hmm.
How is this statement like, save 10%, or do you really need that, or treat yourself? How is each one of these a statement of safety and protection for you? So
yeah.
that would be kind of the next thing to kind of like jam on, you know, take a few of these, especially if there's one that's kind of going against what you would like to do, like what the cognitive part of you wants to do.
Yeah. It's, to me, it's interesting to see the juxtaposition of like the money tree thing, but then also the like, we treat ourselves when we can, because what it's telling me is that like, well, money is scarce, but like when we do have it, we can treat ourselves, which really sets up like an, for me, like an inability to save. Right. So one thing, and I should also like, these were a lot of things I heard from my mom. My dad comes from a more entrepreneurial background. He had his own, he's always had his own business. His whole family did. So I'd be curious to talk to him about his stuff, but.
Right. And again, why we can have some of these things that are really in conflict with each other. Cause it's like, well, as a kid, you're absorbing, you know, all these different lessons and phrases from these important people in your life. And sometimes they contradicted, but here they are, they've landed in you. And sometimes they're like duking it out within you. So I think this is a really important one. Like, yeah, money doesn't grow on trees. Like that's a want, not a need, but then treat yourself and get the things that you want. Right.
Right.
And these things probably come up in different contexts for you. How would you say, it sounds like you know a lot about your family and your farming background, you know, like the money doesn't grow on trees. How is that a protective phrase for you? Like, how is that phrase trying to protect
Well,
you?
for me, it's not really. I know that my mom grew up probably more like financially insecure than my dad. My dad's family was very, very frugal. But farmers like can do, I don't know what the farming economy looked like when my dad was a kid. I know what it looks like now, which is probably very different. My mom though, like her parents got divorced and then my grandma was like a single mom. And I know my mom was like, she said she got like one small thing for Christmas every year. Like that was her childhood. So probably very different for them. But for me, like I've always rephrased my personal money mantra. I say, my business is my money tree and it will be fruitful like when I develop it, which is like more, you know, it like brings more abundance. But then at the same time, I'm always like, well, I can save later because I'm going to keep making money.
Right. And so I would be really, if you kind of like look at these quadrants, they all impact each other,
Right.
right? Like, well, the more you spend, the less you can save. They're all kind of like reflective of each other. And I think you brought up something really important earlier, is that savings is really quiet. It's also not something we see people do, right? It's, we don't really talk about it, like how much money they have in the bank. So like it can feel mysterious. So I just want to kind of say that. And spending money is the most visible and the most tangible thing we can do with money. It's like the thing we see other people do of these four things. It's the thing we see, it's visible. And then when you're spending money, it is tangible. Like when I was holding the cup, it's a tangible thing. So I think we get really absorbed with the spending part of this quadrant. When the savings and the debt are quiet, they're quiet. It's less sexy, it's less showy. So, but they all, as you know, like impact each other. So I'd be, something you might want to just sort of explore is, okay, knowing that like the savings quadrant is feeling a little murkier maybe for you. Like, okay, how can I take the part of the quadrant that's working better for me? And like, what strengths are happening there that I could rewrite into the savings part? You know, how can I still show like, you know, my internal family, this family we carry along inside of us, that like, I am taking care of myself because that's all they wanted for you, right? That's all they want for you is for you to be safe. So that would be kind of a question if you could rewrite some of these phrases to be like, here, I'll give you an example for me. So like for money is the root of all evil, I said, or no, actually, I'll give you a better example. For the poor but proud, we're poor but proud, I wrote, I am proud of my working class roots. So it's like, it's like a slight difference. Like I'm acknowledging where I come from and that's my roots, but that doesn't necessarily define where I'm going in the future.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's like, money doesn't grow on trees. Okay. How could we rework that in a way that feels like you're honoring your past and going forward? Money doesn't grow on trees. How could we, like, we rewrite that? Right? That feels good for you.
I mean, it was like I said earlier, to me, I'm like, well, a tree is a living organic kind of thing. So if you know, you water it, you prune it, you do all the things that you need to do, it's going to provide for you abundantly.
And I'm wondering, there's a tending to it.
Yeah.
Like, well, we have to tend to the tree. I will tend to the tree. And I'm wondering, okay, I'm totally hammering this like metaphor, but maybe your farming roots will get into this. Like, is there like a wise time to harvest? Like, I will know when it's time to harvest, and I know when it's not time to harvest, or like that there are seasons for my income. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, I really want to work with this metaphor of the tree that you could kind of relate to, that like, just because like there's abundance doesn't mean I need to eat it all. Are you going to eat all the apples when they're ripe?
No, you make a good point. Yeah. Okay. I see where it's coming into the savings, right? Like, I'm actually thinking we have a lemon tree in our yard right now. And it pops off in January and February, which is when we're talking about this, right? So there is a peak season. It doesn't mean that I need to make like 10 gallons of lemonade right away, but you got to like space it. Where I think the analogy get lost is that money doesn't spoil, right? So yeah, it doesn't spoil. Although you could then make an analogy to like, well, you want to invest it, because although it's not spoiling, it's not growing as much as it could be if you're just leaving it on the tree.
Right.
But
I'm thinking also preserving.
Right.
You can preserve food and you can also harvest seeds. We're really going for it.
No, but I like it. I like it. Cause then it actually paints this like mental picture of like allowing your tree to continue to like grow and grow and grow and grow without like constantly having to like, I'll say prune it, like by picking the money. Like every time a new dollar bill sprouts, you don't have to like go take it off and spend it. You can like let it accumulate.
Right. That a wise farmer kind of sees the whole life cycle of this plant. Right? How can I be a wise farmer with this? I think that would be really like, it's such a great way to honor your past also, even though you're doing very different work than your family came from. That's so much in your roots. And I think we want to work with those roots instead of like rejecting them. You know, like
do you
I
know
honor
that,
my working class roots.
Slightly off topic, but do you know that like visual chart they showed where they're like, when someone talks to you about an apple, do you see a clearly defined apple in your brain? Or you know what I'm talking about? It's like a
I don't
zero
think so.
To a five scale, because like some
Oh,
people
okay.
can't like fully like picture things in their head. Anyway,
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm picturing this full tree, and I feel like we're writing a children's book right now, or we're illustrating a money. Like a
Well, there is The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. It's actually
yeah.
about how you need to take care of it and stuff. I haven't read it in ages. Well, so then the last step for this, I would have you kind of make a brand new grid.
Okay.
And like not only, you know, rewrite the phrases, but also rewrite the words themselves, because like a word like debt is like instant, like some people just get a pit in their stomach, right? So let's maybe use some different words. Like for me, let's just call it borrowing money. That feels very different than debt. I don't know if it feels like that to you, like a little lighter, a little bit like I borrow, I pay it back. So like I rewrote, instead of like, you know, never have a credit card, which is what my dad said, I have, you know, debt is a tool I use wisely. I borrow money with caution and I repay it. Like,
yes.
Oh, this is so much more neutral, right? Like debt is actually morally neutral, but we have a really heavy history with debt in our whole culture, whole world. So like instead of income, I have just making money. For me, that, I don't know, it just feels a little more alive for me. I'm spending money instead of expenses. And instead of savings, I just call it keeping money. Because that just feels a lot more simple. That's what I'm doing. Or patient money, or future spending. So I would encourage everybody to, when they rewrite their quadrant, is what other words could we use? Someone in the group just today said, instead of calling it expenses or spending money, I'm just calling it living. And that like made a lot more sense for her, you know? So so then you have a whole new quadrant with words that feel lighter for you and more applicable for you, with phrases that still honor your background and your history, but make more sense for your context right now. Because a lot of these phrases are out of context. Like you said, like that phrase had a lot more sense for farmers than for me, you know? For my dad, yeah, of course, like his family lost everything into the Depression. Of course, he was wary of banks in a way that I don't need to be, right? So kind of like honor that past and let them know, hey, I'm going to be safe. I'm taking care of myself. So
Okay.
that's the exercise.
I like that. I'm gonna have to do some more journaling in my notebook.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Maybe more than a sticky note.
Yeah, I know more than a sticky note for sure. I'll have to carve out a page. I like it. I think we're getting somewhere with the whole tree for me in particular.
I love it. So if I had a whole session with you, I'd have you like really work on it, really make an image, and we'd revisit it. It would be very
Yeah,
cool.
get out the construction paper and like do a whole
Totally.
thing.
Totally.
I like it. All right, Rachel. Well, we've gone through this exercise. Thank you so much. Everyone should go through this. If people, okay, are you ready for my final hard-hitting question?
Please.
Okay, so we have a Facebook group called Brayden's Besties. All of our listeners should go join the Facebook group if they want to be one of my besties. Rachel, where should people go if they want to be one of your besties?
Go to themoneyhealingclub.com, sign up for my email. I'd say that's the best thing. I'm kind of inconsistent on social, but I'm very consistent with my email. But Instagram at moneyhealingclub or moneyhealingclub, excuse me.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you
Come
so
join us.
much.
Thank you.
Hey there. Before you go, I wanted to give a quick thanks. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you loved it, I would love for you to take a screenshot of the episode or snap a quick selfie while you are listening. Share it on social and give me a tag. It'll help other kick-ass entrepreneurs like yourself find the show. That's it for today. I'll be back soon with a new episode. Meanwhile, let's roll up our sleeves and unfuck that biz.